We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. This is a really big week of major releases. We have, I believe, the NFL draft. We have Avengers Endgame coming out tonight. We have Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3. And we have In the Know, the best of the best. Mason, don't you agree that we are on par with these blockbuster releases, if not better?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, on par, I think, is a baseline. We've got to be well in front of those other options as far as weekend entertainment. Although I'm not – Marvel and Game of Thrones are just a couple of things I'm not super into. I'll catch the Marvel movie at some point.
Like a hipster?
No. With Game of Thrones, it's just I didn't start at the start of the when season one, and then I kind of got too far gone. Kind of like I felt the same way about Lost. Everyone loved Lost for so many seasons, and I just didn't get on board at the start, and so I haven't had the chance to catch up.
Lost is something you should not waste your time on.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Everyone
watched every single season, and he said it was the most regrettable waste of time in his life.
Wait, who said that?
My roommate.
Oh man. Well, that's good to know. I'm super excited for. I'm a big fan of Billions on Showtime, and that's on Sunday nights. Also, Anna and I liked the first season of Barry, but this season's kind of sucked. So I'm not as excited about that. But just my highlight of the weekend for entertainment is definitely Billions.
Fair enough. I mean. I can't call you a total weirdo for not being into the Marvel and Game of Thrones, but you know, you, I think you've redeemed yourself a little bit with Billions and Barry a bit. Anywho, jumping on to the Pelicans and speaking of redemption, we're going to get right into it. Do you think there's any chance Anthony Davis can redeem himself in the eyes of the fans here if he stays long term? And I ask you this question because there's been a little bit of buzz lately after David Griffin went on national television and during his introductory press conference, and he was pretty clear about wanting to pursue the idea of keeping AD. He says he has a really good relationship with Rich Paul and that he's excited about the potential with Davis, and he thinks Davis feels the same way. So, Mason, can Davis redeem himself?
Well, first of all, I think the notion that he has to redeem himself in the eyes of fans is bogus. Only because I think the majority of fans of the team are more of the casual nature and don't really would be very quick to forgive him because of how good he is and how much more fun he potentially makes this Pelicans team. There are some people who will not forgive him. And I just think that's just a vocal minority. And I think it's more prevalent on like on Twitter where you have a bunch of crazy diehard fans on there. But generally speaking, I don't think it's a big deal at all. Obviously none of us love what he did, since February with the clutch thing and LeBron, the Lakers, no one liked that. But I think if Griffin can get him to buy back in, I'm quick to move on. So and I think most of the fans are too.
You would forgive and forget.
Yeah. I think that's what you have to do.
Okay. I think it's fair. I would personally forgive. I would not forget.
Okay.
I would still be looking at the opportunity to trade him if the right package arises. And I think he's infinitely more valuable on a long-term deal than he is on his current deal. Because right now, any team you trade him to, they can use the idea of him walking as leverage against you.
Yep. For sure.
He has publicly already tried to use that to sway the minds of you know the Pelicans into not trading him into particular destinations. So once he signs a long term deal, you know that option suddenly off the table. He has to stay around for the duration of his deal. So let's talk about a little bit about the minutiae of his deal. So the only reason I ask this, reason I would ever entertain the idea of bringing back Anthony Davis is if he signs the Supermax when he becomes eligible, correct?
Right. Yeah. No question. And then I think the rule with that is you have to keep him for a year anyway, right? You can't trade him for a year.
Yes. So the moment he signs that deal, it's not like he has a no trade clause because it's not up to him. He just cannot be traded, period, for 1 year. So you have a whole year to, I guess, sell him on a new vision. And then if that year has elapsed, personally, I would be looking to trade him after that year, but who knows, you know, a lot can happen in a year and maybe the trajectory of the franchise really does shift for the better. Maybe they strike gold in the lottery. Maybe they are able to swing for the fences and acquire a star or semi-star that really elevates the ceiling of this team. A lot can happen. And, you know, we saw Paul George recommit to OKC, and it's not impossible that the Pelicans pull together things that make this a welcoming environment for Davis. Now, I wanted to ask you this question, and it's a loaded question because I think we both already know the answer to this, but when David Griffin went on TV and in his introductory press conference and mentioned these things about wanting to try to keep Anthony Davis, what was your initial reaction, and did you take him seriously?
My initial reaction was, this is a leverage play. It's smart. Is there a chance, higher than 0%, that he could make that happen and keep AD, convince AD to stay? Yeah. I bought into it greater than zero, but I considered it less than 1 or 2%. I consider it mostly a leverage play with maybe a shadow of reality in it. But you know, as time's gone on, we've seen, he's kind of doubled down on those comments. And you really did a good job on the website of writing up kind of his potential thought process and why it would make sense for him to really go all out to keep AD. So I'll let you talk a little more about that, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, you know, one thing we really do well on this podcast is subtly brag about each other's posts recently come out. And we do it aspect of this podcast.
But we do it with others too. Like when other guys on the site put out work, we make sure to subtly or not so subtly bump that stuff too.
Yeah, very much so. In any case, if you hadn't had the opportunity to log on to bourbontreechats.com, wow, big plug there. I wrote an article the other day, and the article was breaking down David Griffin's thought process on keeping AD and why I think, and I think it's more than I just think, I think it's real. David Griffin feels it's real. They are very much serious about keeping Anthony Davis. Now, if you're David Griffin and you are brought on to a brand new team, and ownership has given you pretty much everything you've asked for in terms of resources. You're going to build up your own staff, your analytics, your scouting, your med staff, all that good stuff. And your team itself actually has a top 25 player or so. I would say this year he was a top 5 or 6 guard in the league, who is a tremendous two-way player. He's in the prime of his career. He's locked into a deal for the next few years. The team has a considerable amount of cap space with the ability to extend it further if they move a few pieces. They have about $20 million or more in expiring contracts, along with a few young pieces that show intrigue. I'm not saying that they're world beaters and they're like super promising prospects, but you know, you guys have guys like Frank Jackson, Kenrich Williams, Christian Wood, and even Ja, I'd put in that group of people. Where young players with intrigue and upside, and at least the potential to turn into cheap role players on their contracts. So you have that. You have a very, very flexible roster. You have a very flexible cap situation. And if you approach this team and you're like, man, I have a chance to add Anthony Davis to this team. And, you know, essentially the only thing is it's going to cost me. It's going to be like a free agency acquisition. It's going to cost me some cap space. And in realistic terms, it costs you whatever he would net you in a trade. But since we don't exactly have that, he has the opportunity to add Anthony Davis for what I call nothing. But it's going to be the cost of opportunity, right? So he's looking at this really flexible roster with a bona fide stud on it. And he's like, can I add Anthony Davis to this? And if so, should I? I think the logical answer is yes, absolutely. You talk about 29 other teams and you ask them, man, if you had the cap space and Anthony Davis said, I'm willing to come here, would you sign him? Is there a single team in the league that would turn that down?
Phoenix Suns.
Of course. Of course. No, I mean, I don't think there is. I think, you know, if any team was given the ability to magically add Anthony Davis, they would say yes, regardless of their timeline, because you have Anthony Davis and, you know, you figure out how you want to structure the roster from then on, but you get that star, you get that top 10 level player. David Griffin is viewing the situation exactly like that. I think he is excited about the opportunity to potentially bring Davis back. And I think it's more than just smoke. In fact, if you read Scott Kushner's article on this today, and he wrote a very similar thing to what I wrote. And basically he also reported that Anthony Davis and Griffin have set up a meeting in the next month. So they're going to sit down and talk about this in May. And from what I hear, Alvin and Drew have already been in Anthony's ear, kind of working him. I think a lot of parties here want Davis back. Obviously, to even sort of pursue this kind of plan, you would need ownership approval. You would need Drew's approval, because I think this is Drew's team. And anything that you need to do for this team needs to be evaluated in the context of what will this look like next to Drew? How does this help the roster around Drew? Is this a good fit with Drew? Kind of how they've approached the team building years past, where it was like, how would things work around AD? Well, no, you work with the team, the players you have right now. And I don't count Davis as a player you have right now. I view him as an acquisition, right? And so you get sign off from Drew, who's your franchise player, and you get sign off from Alvin Gentry and his staff. And every single one of those parties is completely behind the idea of bringing Davis back. So if they're all behind the idea of bringing Davis back, what do you have to lose, right? You know, you sit down at the table, you sit down with him and his agent, and you sell him. You sell him on your vision as a franchise. You talk about, hey, these are the resources that the ownership group has empowered me. These are the way things are going to be different than your experience here. This is, for all intents and purposes, a new franchise for you.
Yeah, like, it's a good point, because you think back to what AD said in February, whenever it was, also Rick, when he said, you know, at all 29 teams are on my list. We'll make it 30 now, because like you said, this, you have to position this as a new team. It's you have some, obviously you have some overlap, some roster carryover. One such player is the cornerstone of the team, Drew Holiday. But yeah, I mean, this, you have, from the top down, you have to show him how much different things are going to be. And I think the team has done that publicly so far, and now it's up to them to really double down on it and show AD they mean business.
Yeah, I mean, the team has talked the talk and walked the walk so far in the promises that they have made Griffin. And I don't anticipate that stopping anytime soon. So Davis has to view that sort of commitment as something completely different than what they had with Dell, right? Secondly, if I'm David Griffin, you know, here are the couple areas that I'm pitching Davis on. One, obviously, first and foremost, is that Supermax contract. That's through the $235 million contract he cannot get from any other team. It's going to be the richest deal in NBA history. And he can get traded to another team. And if he re-signs with the team that he's traded to, he can get close to the amount of the Supermax, but not quite, right? There's still a difference of it's in the tens of millions of dollars. I don't know what it is. It's still like, I think it's 15 million, something like that. In any case, but if he gets traded to a team he doesn't like and he wants to leave that team in free agency, like he's threatening to do with Boston or, you know, some other teams that aren't on his preferred list of destinations, then he stands to lose even more money, from $40 million to $80 million, depending on how he structures his deal, which is an insane amount of money to lose, especially given that he lost like $25 million when he missed out on All-NBA, like, you know, a couple of years ago. And I want people to understand that just because these guys are millionaires doesn't mean that money is not important to them. Money is very important to them. If you're losing $40 million, that is an insane amount of money. So your first pitch is the Supermax. My second pitch is, this is the most asset-rich and flexible the Pelicans have been in all of Davis's tenure. And okay, well, maybe with exception of the year that they traded for Drew, but it's close, right? They have a pick that's seventh, and they have cap space. They have expiring contracts. They have a litany of second-round picks that they acquired in the Meritage trade. Mm-hmm. It gives them a ton of flexibility to be as aggressive as they want. So now, let me describe why things, from an asset standpoint, a little bit better for the Pelicans than they were in February, right? So in February, obviously the Pelicans didn't have all those second round picks that they got from the Meritage trade and other trades that they made, but it was uncertain where their lottery pick would land, and they couldn't trade back-to-back years, right? Because you can't owe two future round picks. Now we know the Pelicans are slated for the seventh best pick. It could potentially be higher, and there's a small chance it could be lower. But, you know, for the sake of simplicity, let's assume it's number seven, right? The seventh pick is ambiguously better than 13 or 14 or even 19 should they have traded that pick for a player that would have launched them into the playoffs, right? Seventh pick is better. On draft night, they can trade next year's pick as well, like they did with Drew way back in the day. They traded the sixth pick. They drafted Nerlens Noel, essentially, and then they traded the next year's pick. They can do that exact same thing, which is more appealing because it's more assets now, soon, in the short term for another team. But it doesn't hamstring the Pelicans long term, right? Because it's only a year out that you're given your pick instead of multiple years out. So they have the ability to be as aggressive as they want, but they're only going to do that if Davis is committed and if the right opportunity presents itself. And, you know, it's been a long time, but I can't go too long without mentioning the name of Bradley Beal, because
I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming.
Of course, you know, everyone, it's been way too long since I've fanboyed over Bradley Beal, but that's just an example, right? If Washington comes to you and you offer them the 7th pick, next year's pick, like 5 second round picks and expiring contracts, and you're like, okay, take Frank Jackson too, and they give you Bradley Beal, you're working with a core of Jrue Holiday, Bradley Beal, and Anthony Davis, which is an insanely good core, right? And then even if you want to trade Anthony Davis, you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to trade Anthony Davis the following year, and you're basically getting back all the picks that you traded along with any like young players that you improve, and you still have Jrue and Bradley Beal. So you have the flexibility to basically shape your own destiny, and I think that's got to be very appealing for both David Griffin and Davis. You got to sell him on that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and it's – yeah, you mentioned first I sell him on this, and second I sell him on that, and I think – they work in combination with each other too, because certain teams that could have the space to or certain teams that may want to sign him, he wouldn't make as much money playing for just because of the way the trade market looks. And so it's it relies on a lot of interrelated factors to get him to a place he wants and the money he wants. It all has to work out really nicely, and then you can turn around and say, well, but you have just as good, if not better, situation sitting right in front of you. And I think it's a good pitch. It sucks, but it may just come down to how much he wants to be in a bigger market. You know, I mean, it really might be that simple.
Yeah. Look, like if he's hell bent on LA, or New York, but, you know, LA, then, you know, tough luck. He's going to have to get there through free agency, right? And the Pelicans are going to take the best trade that's available to him. Now, if LA isn't all that important to him, here's how I would view it, right? Either you can get traded to a team you don't want to be a part of this summer and then lose out money when you leave them, right? Or you can get traded to a team that you don't want to be a part of next summer, but you have your money and you have your Supermax contract. So either way, you're going to end up in a destination that's not your first choice, but do you want the money to come with it or do you want the money to not come with it? That's how I would look at it.
Yeah, that's fair. And we'll see what I think the pitch about it being a brand new team is a totally reasonable one. And the question just remains it's all going to come down to what the superstar wants. And I think this is the point for AD to take back control of his own. Even if he doesn't end up in New Orleans, which is the most likely outcome, it's an opportunity for him to take back control of not just the narrative, but just his own life, man. I mean, it's been no secret that everyone's been talking about how Clutch or LeBron has been dictating his future. And I think if you're Anthony Davis, you've seen that and it's probably frustrated you a little bit. And now you have a chance to really put your face out there and speak for yourself and hopefully start to change the perception of basically his personality and over the past couple months. Have you thought about that at all or no?
Yeah. I mean, I think the road to recovery for him in terms of image is really easy because he has never once said he doesn't like the city of New Orleans. He's maintained that he loves New Orleans. He never once said anything, you know, outrightly disrespectful about the Pelicans organization. He just says he wants to go somewhere that gives him a chance to compete and is committed to winning. He can easily say, hey, due to the changes the Pelicans have made, I am very happy in the direction they're heading. I want to be here. I love New Orleans. And that's it. You know, that's all he has to do. He's like, I'm very committed to my teammates. I love Jrue. I, you know, love playing for coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The path is right there for him to say all the right things if he wants to come back. And I don't think those would be lies either.
Yeah, but I think even – so even if he doesn't end up in New Orleans, I still think there's a pathway here now for him to start to rehab his image. I mean, he could come out and say, just like David Griffin said, I'm going to give this team a fair shake. I know what I said before, and I'm not saying I'm going to stay, but I do think that they've made some taken some good steps. And I'm going to hear them out. And even if it ends up not amounting to anything, I think that's I don't see, apart from potentially costing whatever team he's going to get traded to a little bit of leverage, and thus further depleting that team's roster, I don't see any other downside to doing something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if he comes out and says I'm willing to give the Pelicans a fair shot, then Pelicans fans, that is a gold mine, because Pelicans trade leverage just goes through the roof at that point.
Right.
Through the roof. And I think that's the byproduct of David Griffin wanting to honestly, you know, have a conversation with him and Rich Paul, as well as pitch him on this new organization. That is the byproduct. I know we both first thought that leverage was the initial play. Leverage is the byproduct. It's the gravy. You know, if leverage is what comes out of it, great. Pelicans are going to get a great yield, because I think if you realistically have the threat of Anthony Davis not leaving New Orleans, even if he doesn't sign the extension, if you realistically have the threat of New Orleans not doing anything, it changes the market a little bit, right? Teams can say, okay, we're going to wait it out, but there are a lot of desperate teams right now. Mm-hmm. LA's desperate. Boston, we don't know what their future is going to look like with Kyrie. You just don't know, right? So that might embolden some teams to think that, okay, the offers aren't as high as they have been. Let us just go all in on Davis. We have the opportunity to get him now, right? So that's one way to increase your offers. If the threat of Anthony Davis signing a multi-year extension to stay in New Orleans is there, that absolutely raises the market, because this is your shot to get him.
Yep. Yeah. I think one other thing that's a part of this is, well, we talked last week about the David Griffin hire and how the script kind of flipped from Ferry to Griffin pretty quickly. I don't think you can undersell the fact that he has these relationships with not just, I'm not even talking about LeBron James, but I think the relationship with Clutch is not something to be ignored, in the sense that I think there's some mutual respect there, and you have a much better chance here at a dialogue than Dan, you would have with Danny Ferry.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I am not a fan of the way Clutch handled things. Mm-hmm. I am not a fan of the way the last few months went down, but Clutch does represent very talented players, and you never know who they're going to end up representing. So to completely cut off an agency is just not a good outlook going forward in the NBA. So his relationship with Clutch is definitely a positive in my book. Now, so with all this said, would you prefer let's say Boston offered you pretty much everything now, this summer, but Davis said he was willing to re-sign? Knowing those two options, what do you choose?
So Boston throwing in the kitchen sink at the Pelicans versus AD on a Supermax?
Correct.
Oh, AD on a Supermax. I'm not even thinking twice about it.
Really?
Yep.
Explain.
Okay, well, AD is a top five player in the NBA, and you've got him locked up through his prime years. The worst case scenario is you trade him in a year with an entire Supermax contract, and your offers would not be worse than that offer from Boston, just because of how much the fact that you have a top five player locked up long term. I just think that's you've got the asset there. If he signed on Supermax, why trade it for some question marks, even if they're promising question marks like Jason Tatum?
I think the logic there is very sound. For me, it's tough to separate my emotions on this and my brain. I think emotionally I'm ready to move on, and so I would prefer to just get it out of the way. And if you're getting a treasure chest, just take it and build a new future, build a new vision, build around Drew and all of that. But at the same time, this is what I'm apprehensive about. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 1 year, who's going to have the assets and what are they going to look like? So let's talk about Boston for a second, right? The Kings pick is going to get drafted this year. The Clippers pick is going to get drafted this year. Boston's own pick is going to get drafted this year or traded, you know, whatever they're going to do with it. Jaylen Brown would be entering restricted free agency. The Grizzlies pick might have already conveyed, and you would only have one more year of cost control left on Jason Tatum. So their assets would decline considerably, right? Which you could say the exact same thing for when they come to the Pelicans, but at least the Pelicans have the ability to choose what they want to do with those players and have the ability to retain Jaylen Brown, who won't be a restricted free agent. So their assets go down if they're still in the market for Davis, right? The Lakers offer, I think, gets worse too, because then, you know, Brandon Ingram is no longer on a rookie scale deal. Who knows what their picks are going to look like. So there are very few teams that I see in the position of making a play for AD that are going to give the Pelicans an offer that I think that you can get from the Celtics right now. I just think the timing and the market is at its best at the moment, even though Davis would theoretically have way more value on a long-term contract. If you're getting the kitchen sink now, just take it.
Yeah, but so I guess my counter to that is, and that's a totally fair point. A couple things I think about is, one, there's going to be a suitor or two out there at this time next year that we had no idea, we didn't see coming. So there's that. And there's also the Celtics, they have this stockpile of assets, but like, it's not like those assets disappear next year. They just turn into something else. So picks turn into players. And you could, I mean, if they pick three players this year in the first round, maybe two of them don't pan out, but one does. And so like that, I mean, these guys, they're still assets. I'm not going to say they're still assets, but they're more certain commodities. So
like a car, you just lose 20% of the value the moment you draft it.
I do get that though. But I just don't have the same sort of concerns, I guess.
Okay, that's fair. I think this is a good time for us to pause for our endorsers. That's what we're going to call them, our endorsers. They endorse us. No, we're not endorsing them. Stay tuned. Our next sponsor is Ethos Life Insurance. Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At ethos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken the steps to protect your family, and in most cases with Ethos, you have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day, with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's ETHOS, getethos.com, getethos.com.
Welcome back. So before we left off, we were talking about potential trade packages. I have a litany of trade-related questions to ask you now because you got my gears turning.
All right, let's roll.
So let's say, you know, you do end up trading Davis this year and you get the Boston package. Do you like the Boston package straight up as is? Would you try to incorporate a third team to that deal? I'm going to start with that before we get more specific. So let me define the Boston package. Let me define it for you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What's the Boston package?
Let's say it's Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Optimistically, let's say it's Marcus Smart. I don't think they're going to give up both of Brown and Smart. But optimistically, let's say it's Marcus Smart, and you get the Kings pick, the Clippers pick, and Boston's own pick. Not Boston's own pick, the Memphis pick.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Let's just take Smart off the board and just say it's salary. Just blow away. Yeah. So you have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Memphis pick, Kings pick, Clippers pick.
I like the players. I think Brown and Tatum is just, I mean, as Pelicans fans, we all know that this team hasn't had a competent wing in forever.
Ever.
Like Jamal Mashburn is legitimately who I think about. Or I guess that's not fair. Peja had 1 year before he turned into a pumpkin. So,
but he won a championship.
Yeah, good for him. Maybe Nico will this year too, right? Yeah, so I mean, I value the chance to take a flyer on these two young but promising wings, and I'm happy with them. My what I would consider is moving one of the picks. But I mean, I don't know. So like, it's tough because if you get Brown and Tatum and you're putting them with Drew, I mean, that's a team that it's clearly not going to contend for a title, but that's a team you've got guys who are young, but still old enough where you can start to play. You can try to make the playoffs ASAP. And so I would be in favor of moving one of those picks and trying to get a little bit more talent in the door now rather than winning a draft pick. I don't have a player in mind to move him for. I think skill set wise, I'm looking for somebody who can create their own shot, because that's something that you look at the guys coming in from the Celtics. I think you've got some strong defensive promise, and Tatum's got some of that. Obviously, his offensive game has been, I think, the focus so far in his career, but. I still think you need a little bit more punch on the offensive end. So yeah, either someone that can create their own shot or kind of good complimentary ball handler to Drew on the offensive end. So I guess some of the other backcourt mate for Drew, but, what are your thoughts on Brown and Tatum? Is that a pairing you would like to keep together in New Orleans, or do you have a different idea?
So first of all, I like that you kind of talked about skill set rather than specific players, which is, I think, important when you're trying to evaluate a team. But I am going to break that and mention specific players because there's two players that I am kind of – I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm obsessed with trying to get, but I am increasingly attracted to getting. And those two players are Miles Turner – and Aaron Gordon, both guys who were just recently in the playoffs. They're very young. They're on their second contract, so they would be cost controlled in that regard. You don't see that they're going to get a massive deal down the lane. So you would have two young guys with potential that I would.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon's making a lot of money though.
Aaron Gordon? No, he's not. He has a declining contract, my friend.
Really?
Yeah, Aaron Gordon's contract. Let me look it up. But it's declining, and like his last year's worth like 14 mil or like 13 mil.
Okay, I thought it was more than that for some reason. I thought it was closer to something like Zach LaVine's contract. That's not true.
So he signed. Okay, well, I was a little bit off. So he signed a 4 years, $80 million deal. But it's
okay. That's what I thought it was.
But it's declining, and his last year is at 16 mil, and it goes 21. 19, 18, 16, which is great because declining contracts, especially when the cap is going up, tremendous value there. And then Miles Turner signed a very similar deal. I think he makes 18. He averages out to 18 per year. So those two guys, I would try to get one of them at least by flipping Jaylen Brown and some sort of salary. So it'd be like East One Moore or Solo Hill, whatever you can get away with. Because I would want to put a true power forward in that spot rather than force Tatum to play small ball four or force Brown to play small ball four. And also, I don't want the idea of paying Brown in 1 year. I worry about what he's going to command on the open market as a restricted free agent. I don't want to be stuck with the idea of paying him maybe $20 million or more every year when I can get Aaron Gordon. Same thing
with the cap. So I hear you there. I feel like there's not going to be as much cap space to go around next summer as there is this summer.
There's a cap jump happening next summer.
All
those teams that overpaid those 2016 free agents, like the year of Solomon Hill, those teams are going to have cap next year, and there's a cap jump.
Okay. Well, that gives me a little more pause then. But, yeah. Do you think that either of those guys would cost Jaylen Brown? Like, you couldn't flip one of the draft picks and then some salary? Or do you think those guys are going to cost more?
I don't think – personally, I'd want to keep the draft picks. I would rather have them so I can continue drafting and developing young players. That's my view, because then again, they become cost control assets down the road, and you have an established player that can contribute to winning now. But I do see the idea of, you know, trying to pair those guys up with Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. I do think that Miles Turner and Aaron Gordon, I don't think they're going to come cheaply. I don't think that they can just be had with, like, the 14th pick or the 18th pick. It'd have to be a good pick. I could be wrong, though. I mean, the Magic do crazy things.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking – I mean, so there's the unique thing about both those teams beyond the players themselves is that they're in kind of – it's their teams are at a pivot point with their front courts.
Exactly.
So we've talked about – I think we talked about Turner and Sabonis briefly on a different podcast, but there's also if you look at the Magic, it's even crazier because it's more crowded. You've got Aaron Gordon, and I mean regardless of what you think they're going to do with Vucevic, also you have Isaac and Bamba there. I think Bamba just kind of fell out of the rotation entirely for the playoffs, but there's a bunch of young guys there, and so what
I think Isaac is a stud. I think
he's there. Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. So
and I think his best position is at the four, which is also Aaron Gordon's best position. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think therefore they'd be interested in maybe reducing some positional redundancy and getting Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, I think that'd be something they'd be very interested in. I was just curious if you could do it for a pick and some salary out of it, just because of, you know, the amount of money Gordon's making versus...
I think the reason you can't do it for a pick and some salary is because those teams want playoffs now. They just were in the playoffs. They both were eliminated in the first round. I think they want to improve. I don't think they want to take a step backward. Unless, you know, they're like, you know, really trying to get off money, which I don't think Indiana's desperate to get off Turner's money. But yeah, I think the reason I picked both those two guys is, like you mentioned, the redundancy in their own teams. And sort of, you know, question marks arising after the playoffs, which Miles Turner had a tremendous defensive year. But if you read Zach Lowe's column today, I think, about playoff winners and losers so far, he mentioned guys like Miles Turner who had trouble posting up smaller guys because they just don't have the footwork or the skills to do it. And how that's a problem against, like, switchy defenses, which I think – you know, that's a problem the Pelicans can worry about later. Because, again, the way you could combat that is to have a guard at the other end of the switch that can dominate. So if you have a guard, like, you know, Capella doesn't abuse switches, but he doesn't need to because James Harden is destroying anyone that's switched onto him, right? And Houston's not trying to feed Capella down low. Whereas in Indiana, since they lost Victor Oladipo, they don't have a single guy that can reliably create his own shot and beat people off the dribble. And that's why, you know, Miles
Turner. Thank you for adding the dribble.
Yeah. Shut up. But, you know, I think Miles Turner would be a good fit in a core that featured Jrue Holiday, Jason Tatum, and Miles Turner. Likewise, I think Aaron Gordon would be a similarly good fit. So I'd be very interested in – I think the Boston package would be super appealing to me is if you can get one of those two guys. We're going to bring up Bradley Beal again. If you could trade this year's pick and Jaylen Brown and salary for Bradley Beal, would you? And you still have Tatum on the team. You still get Tatum. You're just sending out Jaylen Brown, expiring contracts, and this year's pick, the 7th pick.
Huh. That's, I think so. I think that's, Beal's got what, two more guaranteed years?
Yeah. He's okay. The same class as AD, but he doesn't have the option.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, are we keeping AD? Oh, no, we're not. So we're trading AD.
Trading AD, you're keeping Tatum, you're keeping all the other picks you get from Boston.
Oh, man, that's tougher then. I mean, that he is the exact player that I was looking to get if we're keeping both Tatum and Brown, but I think I would do it. I'm not 100% there yet because what is this team's ceiling and are you going to be able to keep Bradley Beal in a couple of years? And
I mean, this is the same question. Are you going to be able to keep Drew in a couple of years? You know, you shoot for the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
core, right. You'd have what, a top two backcourt in the league, top three, you know, it depending on how you feel about CP3 or CJ McCollum.
Yeah. So I was looking to see how old Beal was. So, I mean, 25. And it's a interesting proposal. And I think it's close. It just depends on how, I think the Pelicans would do it if the opportunity presented itself. And I feel like
the Wizards probably won't.
It's funny because, I mean, you look at the guy they had, Kelly Oubre, and then bringing in a guy like Jaylen Brown, who they most certainly would not need if they had just kept Kelly Oubre. But
so let me flip the question for you a bit. And it's going to be a two-part question, and I don't know the answer to the second part because I have not thought about it yet. But the first question is same trade scenario. You're trading for Bradley Beal, except this time all you're sending Jason Tatum and expiring salaries, no picks. You keep all your picks, and you have Jaylen Brown. So your roster is Drew Holiday, Bradley Beal, Jaylen Brown, the 7th pick, you know, the Memphis pick if it conveys, but, you know, the Kings pick, the Clippers pick, that stuff.
Nah, I'd rather the first option that you said.
Really? So you'd rather send out that 7th pick?
I'd rather send the 7th pick and Jaylen Brown. Because, I mean, like, you've got a little bit more time with Tatum on the rookie scale. Like, that was a good point you made about Jaylen Brown becoming a restricted free agent pretty soon. And I don't know. I think.
So in a vacuum, to you, Jace, if someone offered you Jaylen Brown and the 7th pick for Jason Tatum, you wouldn't trade that?
No, I would not.
Okay, that's fair. I think that's fair. I think I would still do the trade. I like Beal that much. But that's a topic for another time. The second question is, who is the worst player you would trade Jason Tatum for?
I hate questions like this, man.
It's fun.
The worst player I'd trade Jason Tatum
for. Who do you think, like, Jason Tatum can net on the market? Because Beal's what, a top 15 player, top 20 player? How many players are better than him? Like, let's kind of like go down the list. I don't think he'll net you. Jason Tatum will net you Paul George. Straight up. I mean, you know, making the salaries match.
No, I don't think.
Oklahoma City's
not moving him.
That'd be a hell of a salary saving move.
true.
I don't think he nets you Paul George. I don't think he nets you Lillard. I don't think he nets you Embiid. You know, those guys are too good, right? So it'd be someone lower. I'm trying to think if anyone's like worth it lower.
Let's see.
I keep going right to Beal.
But what about Ben Simmons?
I don't like Simmons. So I used to love Simmons, but I don't like his personality, and I don't think he'd be a good fit here long term. And I think he thinks Philly is too small for him. I think he wants that like LA lifestyle, and frankly, he comes off as kind of a diva. I could be completely wrong about this, but there are people who covered LSU who feel very adamantly about this. So I don't know. I think on paper, yeah, I absolutely take Ben Simmons for Jason Tatum. Would Philly? I don't think they would.
Really? Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I'm trying to go down the list too, and see. I would.
So first of all, would you trade him for any big man in the league?
I would not trade him for any center in the league.
No. So that includes Towns and okay. So would you trade him for Towns? Jason Tatum for Towns?
No.
Really?
I don't like Towns. I think I'm a little lower on Towns than most people, but I don't know. I just value the I feel like talent wise it's a no brainer. You trade Tatum for Towns, but I don't know. In just today's NBA, I get more and more skittish about these about fives and making them like your franchise guy, you know?
Yeah, I mean that's fair. I would trade Tatum for Towns. I think I would. I think Towns is whiny, but his talent's undeniable, and he's a stretch five.
Yeah. So. I guess my concerns come on the defensive end. Is he a guy that you know you can
make a good defense around?
Yeah. Like, can you trust him?
I think you can with the right perimeter. I would trade him for Towns.
Yeah. If that's okay. Like that would be my concern. It's certainly not anything off on the offensive end. And I know he can block shots, but it's just creating a consistent, solid team defense. But what about like What about Devin Booker?
Yeah, I would trade him for Devin Booker. I like Booker a lot. Booker's really good.
Does he defend?
I don't think it matters. I mean, look at James Harden, right? James Harden was atrocious as a defensive player for years, and now he's gotten better in some aspects, but he's still awful, awful off the ball. Devin Booker is extremely young, and I think he can have – I think he can get to the level of impact that James Harden is having. And when you just have that much offense, I mean, he's one of those guys that can, you know, you're talking about beat any switch, you know, that's Devin Booker. And to pair him up with Drew Holiday, who I think would be a perfect running mate for him, right? Because Booker hasn't had a competent point guard since they traded Bledsoe. But, you know, Booker's taken quite the leap since then. But Drew Holiday is a defensive player. He'll handle all the toughest defensive assignments, and there's enough playmaking between the two where your offense would be insane. And so, and you're telling me I get to keep Jaylen Brown then? Yeah, absolutely. I trade Tatum for Devin Booker.
Yeah, I'm already going against what I was talking to you guys about in the Burn Sheet Shots chat. Like, I think it was like either today or yesterday about how it seems like defense doesn't matter anymore. And today's not that it doesn't matter, but it seems like if you've got a top offense, you're going to go way further than if you've got a top defense and like a mediocre offense. So, but I mean like the dominant offensive players, they're just so valuable. And
Booker put up 26.6 points per game and 6.8 assists. So almost 7 assists. He put up almost 27-7 as a 22-year-old. Now I understand that he is on Phoenix and he's tasked to do a lot of things, but I think that the type of things he does only get better on a better team. He may not have the same scoring outbursts. I mean, I think he still would because he only took 19.6 shots per game, which is not, you know, he can get that here on the Pelicans. Drew isn't taking, you know, 25 shots a game or anything. So he can get the same number of shots. I think he can put up almost the same number of points. In fact, he played under 36 minutes. His per 36 is 27.3 with 7 assists flat. So like that's really good. Mm-hmm. And he had a true shooting percentage of 58.4 as a 22-year-old, you know, being the only offensive threat on that team, he was unbelievable. I would hands down trade for Devin Booker if I had the chance. Because he's just – I think you can have – there's like – I think you need those offensive players that can just go off at any night and really carry – and I'm talking like Nick Young or like Jamal Crawford go off, but like those guys that are consistent threats on the pressure and they bend defenses with their shot creation. And I think Booker is one of those guys. I think Beal is one of those guys. You know, I think obviously Harden is the pinnacle of this. He's the poster boy, right? And Kyrie is also one of those guys. And we're seeing how Lillard has taken over this playoff series and just dominated, even with a guy like Paul George on him, right? And I think Booker is one of those guys.
Yeah, fair. I mean, fair enough.
Trying to think if there's any worse players.
Is there any? What about like Darren Fox plus X from the Kings? Like I would flip Tatum for Fox and Buddy for in a split second, but the Kings wouldn't do that.
That's tough. I like Fox a lot, so I probably would too.
Like if I'm getting Fox and Buddy, I think I'd do it.
I like Fox a lot. I like the Kings. I mean, obviously, I love Buddy. I'm trying to think if there's any other perimeter players. And there just aren't too many, like, up-and-coming young wing players or, you know, wing players on, like, their second contracts.
Yeah, you're speaking to exactly why I value Tatum maybe a little unfairly highly. Like, I think that I'm still of the opinion that his role being a bigger wing that can play and defend the three is just such a – it's such a rarity in the NBA, and that's why
I'm going down the list on ESPN's Real Plus Minus page, and you know you have Paul George, he's not being traded. LeBron, he's not being traded. Kevin Durant, he's not being traded. Kawhi, he's not. You know, none of these guys are accessible.
Right.
You're going down the list, and no outside of those four guys, I wouldn't trade Tatum for any of these other people on here. I mean,
yep,
I would trade
exactly.
Luka, but Luka's not being traded.
That's the struggle. That's the struggle for me. Is like I don't. There are players that are better than him that I definitely would not trade Tatum for, just because I can probably get someone else that plays that position who is close enough to that talent level that makes me okay with it. Whereas if I trade Tatum, who am I getting to replace Tatum at his position? And I know we're going towards positionless basketball more and more, but like that, you still need that. That type of size and switchability and versatility on both ends of the floor is just
what makes every great NBA team.
Yeah.
So,
it's tough.
It's tough. I really don't see, like, I went down this list and I know we arrived at Booker. I don't think there's any way Phoenix gives up Booker for Tatum. The only person I keep seeing is Bradley Beal, and that's the one I keep coming back to. The rest are either I wouldn't trade him for, or the team, no team in their right mind would give him up for Tatum alone. Cool. Fun story. Fun little discussion there. I think moving along on similar topics, you look at the playoffs that have been happening right now. So like, let's talk about the West Coast first, and then you know we can talk about the East. So in the West, the Rockets had made a gentleman sweep of the Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. Portland beat OKC on an outrageous performance by Damian Lillard. Probably the best buzzer beater in history.
Series ending.
Yeah, it's just insane. And the Warriors are struggling with the Clippers. And the Spurs and the Nuggets are tied at 2-2. So the two teams that are eliminated, OKC and the Utah Jazz, basically got beat. So OKC got beat by a very very dominant backcourt duo, right? Houston also has a dominant backcourt duo, and they just ran in circles around two very good defensive teams. Mm-hmm. Both those teams, you know, they have very expensive centers who are very good. Don't get me wrong. They're very good. They're good in the regular season. They got played off the court. And that's Steven Adams and Rudy Gobert. I mean, Rudy Gobert was almost unplayable during the Rockets series entirely. And he was totally last year. This year, I think as
they started to figure it out.
They started playing that top lock defense where Rubio was just behind Harden the whole time and funneling everything to Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that would work if Houston had a stretch five. You know, if it was anyone but Capella, like if that was against Golden State, that would definitely not work. And Steven Adams, he averaged like 11 points and 7 rebounds this playoffs. And he's making $24 million a year. Those are two guys I mentioned. First of all, if you could trade for any guys off of those teams, who would it be? Yeah, let's just start with that question.
I mean, I think I would look to I mean, so let's be realistic here. You're not getting Paul George. Russell Westbrook's contract is going to quickly become an abomination. You don't want him. And OKC's not going to treat him for nothing because he's – I mean, those two guys are the heart and soul of the team. They also love – like even if you like Steven Adams, I just think that he's been there so long. The fans love him. I don't think they're just going to drop him for salary reasons. They would probably try to move a guy like Schroeder first. I think I'd look to Utah. Even though Joe Ingles kind of went cold all playoffs, I think he's a guy that you can. He's a shooter, and like I said, he's a wing with some decent size, and I think that's where I would go first. But I mean, obviously Donovan Mitchell, but Utah's not trading Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. It's tough. I don't love any of the players on either squad as far as players who are not stars, you know?
Fair enough. Does Derek Favors count? I feel like that's a cheating answer. He's an option, so he's technically not a free agent.
I mean, I figured he was going to opt out, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I like Derek Favors. I would, if he was the starting center for the Pelicans next year, I would not be upset. I definitely want a big man who can play the pick and roll very well, but also be a good rebounder and defender and set good screens. And I think Derek Favors kind of is all that.
Yeah. I mean, I like Favors. So I think he's going to be he'll probably be a free agent, but I don't know who else. Is Exum good?
No.
I don't think he is. But yeah.
I mean, he's not $11 million good.
Oh, shoot. I didn't realize that was his deal. I forgot about that.
No.
Not a Grayson Allen fan?
Yeah, no thanks. If OKC came to you and they offered – they would never do this. But if they offered you Roberson for Etuan, would you do it?
It is as – so I'm going to correct you because Brett Dawson did it to me when he came on this podcast. It's Roberson.
Roberson. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Roberson.
Wait, what's the deal?
Would you, if the OKC came to you and they said, here, you can have Andre Roberson for Etuan Moore and Frank Jackson, would you do it? I added Frank Jackson. I didn't add it first, but and Frank Jackson.
It's a probably not. I don't know. I mean, I know how valuable Roberson's been on defense, but he hasn't played in a year or over a year really, and I just don't trust it enough. And I could buy into a more for Roberson swap just as a flyer, but I mean no reason to throw Frank Jackson there, in my opinion. Not that I think he's gonna be this amazing player, but just not worth it.
I probably would, and only because I just looked at his contract, and he's effectively an expiring. I mean, he's an expiring next year.
Yeah, he's like, what, $10 million?
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would. Why not? If it all works out, then you have one of the best defensive players in the game. If it doesn't, then, I mean, not like Etuan Moore is adding anything to your roster.
All right.
Whatever. Okay, going to the East. In the East, the Pistons were swept, like, in a very embarrassing fashion. The Magic lost in five. The Nets lost in five. Mm-hmm. And the Pacers were swept. Wow, the East is flying along. Are there any guys? So let me start with the Pistons first. Would you trade for Andre Drummond in general?
I would Not really. I wouldn't give up anything of value for him.
So if they, okay, so if all it took was expirings and some seconds. So Solo Hill, Etuan Moore, and some seconds. Would you trade for Andre Drummond? Would you want him on the team?
So he's 27 million next season, which is, I mean, in the near term, if AD's staying, no, I really don't want Drummond, which is ironic considering we were one pick away from being able to put those two together. If the Pelicans had gotten the ninth pick instead of the 10th, and took Austin Rivers instead. I mean, so he's got, so 27 million and 29 million over the next 2 years, assuming he opts into his player option, which I feel like he will, because no one's going to pay him that kind of money, I don't think. But yeah, I don't, it's just, it's tough with a player like him in today's NBA, you know. I would do it if there was no AD and you were thinking about kind of a gap year, so to speak. Otherwise, no.
I would do it with one exception. I would basically have to have a face-to-face meeting with him and ask him, are you comfortable never getting a post-up shot? Are you comfortable like ending games with only the 8 shots that game? You know, you can get all the shots you want off of offensive rebounds. We're not going to count those, but like maybe like 8 dedicated shots, you know? And if he says, yeah, I'm cool with that, I 100% go after him. I never want to see him try to post up. I never want to see him try to do some ISO step backs. Whatever they've been doing in Detroit, that stuff is nonsense, you know?
What about his defense?
I think his defense is fine when he's engaged. I think he is a rim deterrent. I think he gets steals at a pretty high rate for a big man. I think he is a pretty okay passer. I think there is a lot of good in there. He just hasn't been able to consistently put it all together. And I think it manifests itself in bad ways. I think you kind of saw that in the playoffs where it was like, He was not good in the playoffs. Let me pull up the stats real quick. He averaged 14 points and 13 rebounds in the playoffs, but he shot 44% from the field, which is really bad for him. But this year, you know, which many considered a down year for him, you look at his production, he averaged 17 points and almost 16 rebounds a game. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, the production's there. I just don't know how he fits. Not that Detroit pairing alongside Blake Griffin is the ideal situation for him, but I would definitely take him if the cost was negligible.
Yeah, he's 25 years old. I'd take him for the rebounds and – yeah, the rebounds. You know, if you have Drew, Tatum, and whatever, and Drummond's your big man, yeah, that's fine. I'd take him. We already talked about Magic a little bit with Aaron Gordon. Is there anyone else on that team you want that they're willing to give up?
I mean, I'd be interested to see what they think of. I mean, I don't. Are they already over Mo Bamba? Like, he didn't play in the playoffs.
I giving up on the 6th pick in a year. I don't think they are. I mean, they've given all their picks. I mean, they gave Alfred a long time. I don't think they're the type to give up on their picks.
Yeah. They've got Fultz now. I'm sure they want to ride that train out. And since they traded a protected, I think pretty heavily protected first for him, probably gonna end up being 2 seconds, but
I think it was the OKC pick they traded for him.
No one else jumps out to me unless we want to go get our Tulane boy, Melvin Frazier.
Yeah, no, I was a big fan of him in the draft, but, you know, he's whatever. Okay, so no one there. What about the Nets? The Nets are an interesting partner because they come up in Anthony Davis trade talks. Do you like their potential package, whatever that potential package may be?
I'm not in love with it. I mean, no one – like, I look at their roster apart from – LeVert's obviously great. He's on an incredible contract.
Jared Allen. You're about to lose cost control with LeVert, too, because he is – this was his third year in the league, so it's his final year of a rookie contract next year.
Yeah, true.
And he's already 24. Or he's 25 right now. I don't know. He's old.
Yeah. And then Jerry Allen's been great. But I mean, apart from those two guys, like, I don't know. Someone's about to overpay D'Angelo Russell. Dinwiddie's awesome. I would – just because of his personality alone, I would love to have him on the team.
So let's lay it out. So you get Dinwiddie, LeVert, Allen, the Denver Nuggets pick, Brooklyn's own pick this year, and another future pick.
Yeah, that just doesn't do it for me.
Okay, that's fair.
But
is it because you don't really see star potential in any of those guys?
Yeah, I mean LeVert, I could get there, but it's he's been. I don't know if you call him a star at this point, but he's been
a bit streaky. It's unfortunate that, you know, his injury happened. I'd like to see more consistency out of him and, you know, ability to make plays for others as well, increase his playmaking. But mm-hmm. I definitely think he can get there. He's a little bit inconsistent at the moment.
But yeah, it's pretty much that. I mean, this is just like a lot of, it's kind of like it's like the Lakers East deal. I think it's just like a bunch of flyers that maybe that nothing screams star potential to me.
Here we go. There's our weekly Lakers singer.
Yeah. They're getting weaker.
They are getting weaker. What about Indiana? We mentioned Miles Turner. I think they're going to have to make a decision.
Holiday Brothers, man. Reunite the Holiday Brothers.
Yes. How could I forget? Yeah, we have to collect the Holiday Brothers. I think Justin.
Collect. I love that term. It's perfect. Collect them.
Because they are a collector's item, limited edition. There's only three of them in the entire league. Okay. We have the best one. But, you know, they're in an interesting situation because they're going to get Victor Oladipo back next year. I think they have to make a decision on Turner and Sabonis.
They have a ton of free agents.
They do have a ton of free agents, but they also don't, you know, they don't have any like long-term money preventing them from signing these guys. Except for Oladipo and Turner, which, you know, they're on reasonable deals.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know if they're going to bring back Darren Collison. I mean, all their guards are free agents. Tyreek, Collison, Corey Joseph, Bogdanovich, I think they'll definitely keep him.
He was really good the back half of the year after Oladipo went down.
Matt Moore put him third team all NBA, which I thought was outrageous, but it
does. Wait, what? He wasn't that good as a guard or as a forward?
You missed that one? Oh, yeah.
What?
I was just using it as a way to say it speaks to the fact that he had a pretty damn good year. He clearly was not worthy of being on an All-NBA team, but he was solid. But yeah, I mean, so they don't have their books are. I mean, they got Oladipo, Miles Turner, Sabonis, McBuckets, and Aaron Holiday essentially, T.J. Leaf. That's their. That's their team of guaranteed contracts at this point. So they, I'm not sure in terms of existing players in their team besides one of Turner or Sabonis. I don't know who else I'd be interested in. I mean, Aaron Holiday, duh. But
would you sign Tad Young in free agency? Would you give him any type of deal?
I mean, I like him a lot. So I would definitely look into it.
Would you say he's better than Randall?
Yes, without a doubt.
Interesting. I might opt to stick with Randall. I know, blasphemous.
Do you think Randall's better than Young?
Than Young? I think Young was really good defensively this year. I think in the event that you do the Boston trade, you're going to have the defenders on your team. You might need some scorers. And I like the idea of giving Randall a 1-year deal better than paying whatever a 30-year-old Tad Young wants.
Fair. I mean, that makes sense to me.
Especially if you trade for Miles Turner, which would be a great fit with Randall.
Well, I think we saw Miles Turner also a great fit with Tad Young.
Yeah. also a great fit with Tad Young. Yeah, there's no one really on that team that, and I don't think they're going to give up Sabonis. So, oh well, Pacers, whatever. Oh, I thought I had a question for you. It was regarding, shoot. Oh, yes, definite question for you. In order, I want you to rank in three-point percentage, highest to lowest, Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, and Julius Randle.
For this past season?
Yes.
I feel – I stopped stat checking after the Pelicans melted down. But I have a hunch that Julius Randle's late season three-point barrage vaults him to the top of that list. And then between AD and Drew, the reason you must be asking is because AD's ahead of Drew. So I'm going to go Randle, AD, and Drew.
You were correct. You were correct. Randle made 34.4% of his threes.
God, I can't believe that was the highest of the three. That's sad.
Anthony Davis made 33.1% of his threes. Poor Drew made 32.5% of his threes.
That's a glorified Solomon Hill.
That's a glorified Solomon Hill. But he did make the most. He made 118. Randle made 67. I don't know. If Randle keeps progressing, if 34, let's say he hits 34% of his threes next year, it's not going to change the way defensive guard him, but like, that's pretty acceptable, right?
Yeah, it's acceptable.
He took 2.7 per game this year. So, like, if he takes three per game, that's not terrible. He makes one out of those then? One out of those three?
I mean, it's not good.
He had a career high in free throw percentage this year. So, it looks like he's trending upwards as a shooter. As a jump shooter.
That makes sense. I mean, I think that's typically what you see there in the NBA. But, I don't know. I think I've always been higher on his offense than you. I think you thought he was just a kind of a black hole.
Yeah, I still think so.
So you have to sell me in his offensive game. It's always been the defense.
But I also think that his offense is – I'm more fine with his offense on a non-Anthony Davis team. But if he's on a Anthony Davis team, no way. I think he takes away from everyone. Because I think guards, if you have good guards, they're going to get their own. But if he's actively taking away from the other big, then no thanks.
Yeah.
How awful would a Julius Randle and Andre Drummond front court be?
I mean, oh, man.
Never forget that Detroit tried to do Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, and Josh Smith at the same time. They're still paying Josh Smith, by the way.
That was a Stan Van Gundy doing,
$5 million, yeah. Yeah, that's why you never have a coach as a president of basketball ops. I can't believe there are some idiots in this Pelicans sphere that were obsessed with the idea of having a president of basketball ops also be the coach. Not going to name
it. It works in one
massive subtweet.
It works in one situation. When your name is Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, when you are the Spurs and you have an amazing staff behind you.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're just Tibbs.
You're either Poppy or Tibbs. There's no in between.
There's no in between. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how all the Pobos that were also coaches are no longer coaches, except for Doc, who gave up his Pobo spot. He's like, I don't want this.
And look how great the Clippers are doing.
Fantastic. Which, hopefully there's some Trent Redden news soon. I think it'll probably be announced after the Clippers are eliminated. I only honestly expected it to be announced this morning.
Come on, man. They're only down 3-2.
I thought the Clippers were done, but they won. So, good for them.
Fun stuff. They were actually – I was looking at odds, and even when they were down – even after they had won one game, when they were down 3-1, the Warriors were minus 10,000 to win the series.
Jesus.
I don't know what they are now as 3-2, but I hope that somebody took that. Or I can't remember. I don't know what the Clippers were, plus some thousand. But
hey, interesting fact. Drew's three-point percentage went way up after All-Star break. He went from 31% pre-All-Star break to 36%. Sample size is a lot smaller. But that's something, right?
Yeah, something, because, I mean, we've had the tale of two Drews throughout his career from three-point range. So
weird.
I'm going to need to see more of it to believe it.
Yeah, whatever. Keep shooting them, Drew, though. We need him to shoot it. Cool. I don't have any more topics to discuss with you tonight. You got anything?
Nah, it's pretty long. Probably about an hour. So I think people are probably tired to listen to us. So,
cool, people. I hope you've enjoyed your blockbuster-filled weekend starting with this podcast. Thanks for listening.